comedy genius Robin Williams, who gave the voice to the genie in Disney's Aladdin and who brought Mrs. Doubtfire to life, grew up in the Episcopal Church. And one time he famously posted a list called the 10 best reasons to be an Episcopalian. You can look it up, it's pretty funny. Number 7 on that list was, you don't have to leave your brains at the door. I suppose that one might be inspired by the fact that in the Episcopal Church, we have 3 sources of authority on matters and questions about God instead of just 1 or 2. We, of course, look to scriptures like most of our Christian friends. We also look to the tradition of the early church elders and documents like our Roman Catholic friends. But we add a third one, our own human reason. That makes us different, and it opens us up to criticism from those who say, well, that can make you wishy-washy, or it might make you subject to the vicissitudes of society. But we believe that our own reason is a gift from God, and that our reason helps us make sense of our ongoing experience of God, as God is revealed more and more, long after the scriptures were written. In other words, we use our brains to help us to discern the truth, wherever that truth comes from. Now, that doesn't mean that we ignore scriptures. As I said, scriptures are also one of the authorities we look to. In fact, when I was ordained, I had to take an oath, and part of the oath was that I believe that the scriptures in the Old and New Testaments contain what is necessary for salvation. But we don't see the Bible as just being a book about God. We see the Bible as being a collection of books about humanity's relationship to God and humanity's growing and developing understanding of that relationship. And if you read it from beginning to end, you see that this understanding grew and developed more and more from humanity's first encounter with God all the way to its culmination in God sending a divine member to be incarnate in the person of Jesus Christ, who was crucified and resurrected and whose mission was continued by his followers. But today we get a story that goes all the way back to the beginning of humanity's understanding or misunderstanding about who God is. Some Bible scholars consider the whole book of Genesis to be a prehistory of God's people because it's based on stories told around campfires. And more research is revealing that these stories were embellished with bits of legend and borrowings from other faith traditions, including pagan faith traditions. And so sometimes these stories sound brutal and primitive. And that includes the stories about Abraham. In a wonderful book called The Gifts of the Jews, the author Thomas Cahill tells us that Abraham came out of the Sumerian culture. The Sumerian culture believed in a whole bunch of gods. They had gods everywhere. And most of them were attached to a particular geographical place or some feature of the land, like a mountain or a river or something. And these gods were jealous and vain and decidedly unfriendly. As another Bible scholar said, about the best you could hope for was to avoid angering one of them so they wouldn't withhold rain from your crops or cause your son to break his leg. And usually, you kept from angering by appeasing them with sacrifices. And he said that Abraham could no more shake off the influence and thinking of his culture completely than we can of ours. The idea that there was one true God who wanted a relationship with people of all things, who would suggest that a person ought to leave what is familiar and quit doing things the way they've always been done to go on some journey, was not just radical, it was insane. And yet Abraham believed the promises and left home to follow where God would lead. And over the last several weeks in our lectionary, we've been following the story of Abraham. We heard how God kept promising that even though they were getting old, Abraham was going to have a child by his wife Sarah. But then they got older and older and older until finally that promise seemed absolutely impossible. In fact, the last time she heard God make it, Sarah laughed with scorn and then tried to lie out of it because she was afraid she'd made God mad. But it turned out that nothing is too wonderful for God, and the promise was fulfilled, and even in their really old age, they had this miracle baby, and she named him Isaac, which means joyful laughter, because she went from scornful laughter to joyful laughter. And it's a really happy part of the story. And then this week, we take a turn for the worse. According to the way it's written, this week we're told that God wanted to test Abraham's faith by telling Abraham to sacrifice this miracle child and use him as a burnt offering. Now, smarter people than I have pointed out that nobody had to explain to Abraham how this is done. Apparently, it was prevalent enough in his culture that he knew how it was done. First, you go to a high place, because that's where all these ritual sacrifices took place. And then you tie up the victim, put him on some wood, take a great big knife, slaughter the victim, and then set fire to the wood. Excuse me. And then maybe God won't be mad at you. And so Abraham set out to do this thing. And just when he was about to murder Isaac, as he was sending his hand with the knife, a voice from heaven stopped him and said, "Don't do it. Spare Isaac." And so Isaac was not killed. And I grew up believing that the point of the story was that Abraham passed the test of faith by demonstrating that he would not withhold anything from God, not even his precious, beloved child. I mean, that's what it says. Then I went to seminary. And I had this Old Testament professor, a wise lady named Becky Wright. And Becky Wright told us there is a body of research that claims that Abraham did not pass the test by his willingness to sacrifice Isaac, that in fact he failed the test right up until the time that he stopped the knife. According to these scholars, it wasn't God who put the idea in Abraham's mind to slaughter his son, because God never asks us to sacrifice someone else. Human sacrifice is abominable to God. We don't know where Abraham got the idea, but it could be the influence of his culture. I mean, he grew up knowing this is how you deal with gods, and he didn't understand enough about the one true God yet to know any different. And so he thought he was doing right. He thought he knew the will of God, but unlike a lot of people, somewhere he questioned in his heart, am I doing the right thing? And so he kept listening, and he heard the voice of God, and he stopped. He changed what he set out to do because he listened. His true faith was in learning that our God is not like those Sumerian gods of death and violence. Our God is a God of grace and mercy. As Thomas Cahill said, Abraham had to learn that the true God is the opposite from the old Sumerian gods with their patently human motivations. That he is the God beyond the mountain, even beyond the sky. The unknowable God whose purposes are beyond the powers of human intelligence, who cannot be manipulated. It would later be said of Abraham that when he left to follow the promises of God, that was his faith. It was reckoned to him as righteousness. But I maintain that he became a person of deeper faith when he asked questions and listened for the answer. Because questioning what we believe is not the wavering of faith. It is the only way to deepen our faith. Unfortunately, this is not a lesson we've learned very well. The world is full of preachers and politicians who are absolutely convinced they know the will of God, and they stubbornly refuse to listen to any voice that might question that. They arrogantly assert that God is on their side, no matter what the issue. But it's not just preachers and politicians. I believe the biggest weakness in our country right now is our refusal to listen to each other. Our refusal to question. See, these days, we can cherry pick from social media and biased mass media to make sure that all of the information we receive comes from voices that say what we already believe and don't question those beliefs at all. We are manipulated by algorithms and by mass media moguls who in turn are manipulated by special interests to keep us stirred up, to keep us angry and pessimistic. What used to be a great strength of this country, the ability to compromise and find common ground and move forward together, is now seen as a politician's greatest weakness. Because like those old Sumerian gods, the political bases must be appeased. And so we yell at each other, we hurl insults, we label people, we categorize people, we keep score, we demonize. What we never do is stop and ask, what if I'm wrong? How can we hear God's voice in all this clamor? How can we know God's will if we don't stop and listen? Some people will say that the opposite of faith is doubt, but theologians will tell you, no, the opposite of faith is not doubt. The opposite of faith is certainty. Certainty that crowds out all faith. Certainty that often leads to distrust and fear. And I believe that most of the anger and pessimism that gets stirred up in us by social media is based on fear. Faith is based on love, not the gooey, namby-pamby, wishy-washy stuff on the Hallmark Channel, but the gritty, difficult living out that's hard and counterintuitive. Because this kind of love never demonizes people. This kind of love never hates. This kind of love never excludes somebody just because we disagree with. It is in this kind of love that we are granted the humility that even when we're pretty sure we're right, we'll at least entertain the question, but what if I'm wrong? Or if not that, at least listen to other ideas in case there's more of the truth that we need to learn. You know, when Robin Williams said, you don't have to check your brains at the door, I'm pretty sure he meant the door of the church. But why would we check our brains anywhere? You know, if reason is going to be one of our authorities, then certainly we ought to be reasonable people. We don't have to be like everybody else in our culture. We don't have to assume that we know the will of God because of what culture tells us. We can be different. We can stop and listen. We can remember that the one true God is a God of grace and mercy and is too big and too wonderful to be put in anyone's little box. And if we can live like that, then we too can. God's test of faith.